Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together, one frame at a time. Hey guys, I'm Randy Unger, and this is a very special episode of Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together, one frame at a time. And with me, as always, I have a lovely panel of guest critics tonight. We have Rachel Kolb and Eric Godfrey, the power couple. Hey, guys. And also Ivy Lofberg. Hey, Ivy. How's it going?
Hey, good to be here.
And our episode tonight is going to be very music-centric, as we were going to discuss two films about composers, one real, one fictional. Those movies are Maestro, which is in theaters now, and just started streaming on Netflix today. And our second film of the evening is the 1995 film Mr. Holland's Opus, starring Richard Dreyfuss. But before we get into that film, Maestro, now I saw this a few weeks ago, big fan. I think the performances were fantastic, some of the best of the year. You've got Bradley Cooper pulling in triple duty here as star, director, and writer, co-writer. And the film is about the real life story of Leonard Bernstein, the composer, conductor, best known for his many film scores and original compositions, most notably West Side Story. And this movie also stars Carey Mulligan, who plays his wife. They have a very complicated relationship, just to say the least. And it is just really, really well done. I thought the performances were top notch. And I learned a lot about this man, actual public figure. And yeah, I even heard that he looked and sounded like the real Bernstein. So that's really cool. And I definitely see an Oscar nomination in his near future. Same for Carey Mulligan. But yeah, power couple, Rachel and Eric, what did you guys think of Maestro?
I mean, I was a very big fan of it. I've always been a big... I was going to say, I think the only other thing Cooper's directed at this point is Star is Born. Yeah. I think he's got quite the track record now that he's going with this. Apparently, he's now obsessed with music. But the fact that the movie is ultimately centered around him and one of my favorite actresses, Carey Mulligan, I think the two of them just... It's an amazing chemistry to watch the two of them on screen together. And I really like a lot of the directorial choices that Cooper made, with how subtle little changes to whether it's the aspect ratio, uses a black and white and color to signify the major eras of Bernstein's life. And I thought that was a very good way of being able to kind of track the passage of time through the little stylistic choices that he made in there. And overall, I was a very big fan of this film.
Very artfully done, very, very careful, well thought out directorial choices by Cooper. So, and this is only his second film, and I really enjoyed A Star Is Born as well. And I think he's just getting better and better as time goes on. So I really can't wait to see what he has next up his sleeves. Rachel, what did you think of the film?
I really enjoyed this film quite a bit. Similarly to A Star Is Born, I think that maybe the first third to first half worked the absolute best for me, that I was just like completely caught up in it. Also, as a musical theater fan, I enjoyed a lot of like the name drops of famous choreographers, famous lyricists, of course, mentions of little Stevie Sondheim at one point. But it was fun to get to hear fun little name drops, and having a lot of New York actors show up, especially a lot of New York stage actors like Michael Urie showing up as Jerome Robbins. I think it dealt also with Bernstein's sexuality and his relationship with his wife, and ongoing kind of cycle of various partners of all different genders. I think that it handled that very well and very tactfully, whereas I could see that if this movie had been made prior to now, it would not have been handled quite as well. In that sense, it kind of reminded me a bit of a Kevin Klein, another musical biopic called De Lovely, that was about the life of Cole Porter, also a composer that was married to a woman but had various ongoing affairs with men.
Now, that would have been a perfect film to pair this with. Something that could have been brought to my attention yesterday? No, I'm kidding.
Another great one for if listeners have not seen DeLovely. I think it's kind of an underrated gem. I enjoy it quite a bit.
Anything that Kevin Kline does is pretty much a gem. So yeah, I'm gonna definitely check out DeLovely. Awesome. I love the recommendation. And you did mention Bernstein's sexuality, which is at the forefront here. He is bisexual. He's kind of a free spirit. He's hooking up with men while he's married to Carey Mulligan's character. And you just want to see where he's going to go next. You never know who he's going to end up in bed with.
The line about that, it's like, did you know that I've slept with both of your parents to the baby?
Yeah, he's just all over the place. And he's just a very fascinating person. And I think Cooper really captured him beautifully. So, Ivy, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely am agreeing with all of you. I thought that the movie was really beautifully shot, and I love that he was really trying to capture the time that the movie was portraying and the way that movies were made then. And kind of like it had a really beautiful nostalgic vibe to it that felt like it fit in really beautifully with the movie. Like I really loved the scenes when she was like, I want to see, you know, what's in your mind. And then you see like they're all dancing and they're all kind of dancing together, but it's also a scene from that he's created. It's like so creatively shot. Yeah. And that I love the opening of it where he's like, you realize he's in bed, you know, with a lovely man, and he's just runs onto the stage, and it's just really it has a lot of life to it, a lot of spirit. You can tell that a lot of passion was put into the movie, and he really wanted to show how much he loved these people and movies and music. And it's really a love letter, I feel like, the movie. And I also agree. I love when actors like make it really big and they put people in really well-made films who deserve it. Like Michael Urie deserves to be in a big movie like this. He was so incredible, and you mostly see him on TV, and he's just so brilliant. And a lot of people like that. And again, I agree, Carey Mulligan was just transcendent. And I thought that, you know, he really is someone to keep an eye on. He's really fully expressing himself, which I think is really cool. I got to see him do an Elephant Man on Broadway, and he was incredible. So
yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Was he amazing? So good. So it was cool to see, you know, like this is a man who, you know, really loves the theater too, and kind of wants all of it to, and all the mess of it, the beautiful mess of it. And all of these, I also really loved, you know, all of these characters, and I agreed in how his sexuality was portrayed. Like he was this big soul who kind of couldn't be contained and wanted to experience so much of life, and was just very fearless in his expression of who he was. And even though it wasn't the safest time to be that person. And so bravo.
Yeah. If I could jump off of that real quick, there's a really lovely moment. It's a lovely and just heartbreaking moment involving a conversation that he has with his daughter, where Bradley Cooper very smartly allows the scene to really breathe and allows you to be able to see this transformation and this moment just happen in the silence, which so much of this movie is not silent. So much of this movie is just completely awash with Leonard Bernstein's music. And this is actually a time when I would really recommend that people watch it with the subtitles on, if only to catch some of the musical cues and some of the hidden meanings that are hidden in just the song choices at certain key moments in the film, particularly one that was written for his wife that comes in at a key moment.
So each piece of music was very carefully curated and placed in the right moment to kind of
absolutely
hide the story a bit. Yeah. Brilliant choices. I think Cooper had a lot to do with that.
Although I do have one question to ask everybody here. What do you think the cigarette budget was on this movie?
$1 million. Scene.
Yeah. Which is probably true to the time, but it's like
mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a heavy smoker, and obviously throughout the film he's got a cigarette in his mouth, and that, you know, attention to detail is prevalent in throughout the whole film, and I definitely credit Cooper with that, for just bringing this real life figure to new life.
Yeah, and I definitely think there needs to be absolute, especially this is some of the best prosthetic, like especially the old age prosthetic, the way they are able to age both him and Mulligan is so well done.
I think if anything, the prosthetic makeup that they did on this makes a case for him doing actually two other biopics that I was thinking of while watching this. A biopic for Robert Preston, who's probably best known for his roles in Music Man, Victor Victoria.
And The Last Starfighter.
Last Starfighter.
Oh, nice.
And also for doing a Robin Williams biopic. I think he could do a Robin Williams biopic brilliantly.
Amazing. But there's
what a great idea.
I don't think there's an actor out there who can duplicate Williams' brilliance.
Probably not.
Actually, no, I amend that, because I do know of a Williams impersonator who makes his rounds at like Comic-Cons and various mm-hmm. events and stuff like that. The prosthetics in this movie, though, are fantastic. I remember seeing they showed Bernstein's neck when he was like in his 70s. The makeup on Bradley Cooper, it looked so leathery and so real.
Yeah.
You know the scene I'm talking about. Like they really zoomed in on that. And I really hope that the makeup designer gets at least an Oscar nomination.
And maybe that Hollywood also takes a cue and says, hey, let's go back to doing prosthetics instead of this weird CGI de-aging.
I agree with that. That's a good idea. Definitely a great job with the makeup, and the music choices were also great. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more about his, you know, about his composing, his style, mm-hmm. his process. This movie was really just about the relationship between the two characters.
And that's what I was talking about with Rachel. I felt like if you're going to tell a story, I think you had two options. And I mean, you could probably, with the career that he had, basically tell like you could probably make an entire movie about just him being called up in the morning, like, hey, you're going on for this career making thing. And I think at some point you had to make a choice. Is it about the music or is it about the relationships?
Right.
And I think for this one, and I think probably smartly so, yeah. I think they were like, we're going to hyper focus on Bernstein and his wife.
Also have a really good line that he says, that he's such a social person that he has a hard time with composing because it's such a solitary job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, I think there actually is like one take that shows, like one scene that shows him like at the piano writing. And it's honestly just the most, just like there's no dialogue. It's just him smoking and then writing some notes. Yeah. And it's like, yep, that's what composing sometimes is.
Yeah, that is. And I get it. I mean, that's what audiences want, relationships. They don't want to see a guy at a piano scribbling notes. I get it. But I would have liked to have seen more of that personally. But maybe we'll get the Cooper cut of this movie. We'll see. Yeah, so guys, Maestro is now playing in theaters, and it just came to Netflix. So if you are interested in the film, it's quite lovely. You know, it is all Bradley Cooper. It's really his baby. Mulligan is fantastic as well. Ever since was it 2 years she did Promising Young Woman?
She's been all the way back since In Education. I rewatched In Education just, I think, about a week ago. Entirely unrelated to this, I ended up rewatching it. And it is, if you want a good Carey Mulligan rewatch, that is a star-making role for her.
Awesome.
And really great performances also from Alfred Molina and just a whole other cast of characters.
That's two movies, Rachel, that you recommended in less than 15 minutes. I love it.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So I want to talk about another movie, a very different movie, but with a similar character. Not as obnoxious, not as well-known. I mean, he's a fictional character, but still pretty fascinating to watch. This movie is from 1995, Mr. Holland's Opus. And it basically tells the story of a composer who, during the 60s, I believe it was, takes a job as a music teacher And the film is kind of like a Forrest Gump type story where he basically impacts the lives of so many while at the same time struggling to complete this piece of music. And we span the life of this brilliant man, brilliant musician, brilliant teacher, who over the course of 30 years, you know, he really makes an impact. Richard Dreyfuss was nominated for a few awards, including the Oscar for Best Actor for this. And he was absolutely wonderful. I believe this was the year he lost to Nicolas Cage for Leaving Las Vegas. So that makes sense. But Dreyfuss really did hit it out of the park here. And I actually have been told about this movie for a long time. And this was the first time I've actually ever seen it about a...
About
2 weeks ago. And I was so happy that I finally got to see it. Kind of sat mad at myself for not catching it sooner. But it's just a really wholesome, a really lighthearted dramedy that kind of hits all the right notes. And I'm a huge fan of this movie now. It made me appreciate Richard Dreyfuss even more. But yeah, enough of me. Ivy, what were your thoughts on this 1995 classic?
I also really love this movie so much. It's one of those movies where I'm so excited that you picked it, because I feel like younger people need to know about Richard Dreyfuss. I feel like he's like you know, I watch older movies now, and I feel I'm starting to feel that way towards actors that are like, hey kids, you know that Richard Dreyfuss is amazing, right? Like, you like keep your eye on him, watch his movie, because he's like incredible. Yeah, and especially in this movie, I love this movie so much. Mm-hmm. It's really, I agree with you in terms of I love watching the creative process too, and I think Maestro was really cool, really focusing on the relationships. And what I loved about this one is like seeing someone who thought that he was giving up his dreams, and he actually discovered this life that was more satisfying and fulfilling beyond his wildest dreams. It has a definitely It's a Wonderful Life quality, I think, of showing this person who thinks they should have had a different life. And I really love how honest he is about it. When he talked about Coltrane, you know, that he's like, at first he just hated it, and then he kept listening and listening and listening, and then he realized he loved it, and that he felt that same way about teaching. And just watching somebody learn how to make someone love music and appreciate music. There's a scene in there where he teaches the girl how to play the clarinet that just makes me cry, because he mm-hmm. just figures out his love for music by mm-hmm. passing it on to students. Like, it's just one of those films that's just like a heartwarming film that feels like it really easily could be a real person, a real music teacher. I really also love, I feel like they did a pretty tasteful job of his little crush, I guess, of the student who kind of fell in love with him, and his journey with that, I thought was done in a more tasteful way. It was kind of refreshing. I feel like there's a lot of teacher movies out right now about student teacher romances, and it was just for
May, December.
Exactly. Seeing, you know, like, it was part of the journey, and he didn't do, you know, it was complicated, and I think done in a very nuanced way. And I also, the last thing I'll say is I really loved how they showed a teaching career through 30 years and how much the country changed in that time and how much the students changed in that time. And that was an extraordinary thing to watch, is how much the country changed in that time. And he was just there teaching the whole time, and the students changed so dramatically by the end. I love this movie. I could talk about it for the next hour.
And the passage of time and the way that the country changes throughout the 30 years, I thought of Forrest Gump right away. I love Forrest Gump. That's a classic in its own right. I don't know if I can compare the two, but I mean, they're both very, very strong films. I also wanted to mention the supporting cast, primarily Olympia Dukakis, who plays the principal at the school. She's brilliant. She was just fantastic in everything she did. Mm-hmm. Very reliable. There's also a very young Terrence Howard in this movie.
Yes.
Which I was like, oh my God, look how young he is. He plays kind of this struggling student who gets involved with the military and yada, yada, yada. If you haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil it. But yeah, it was really weird to see him pop up in there. The wife in the film, Glenn Headley, thought mm-hmm. she was pretty mm-hmm. good too. I would have liked to have seen more of that, like that dynamic between the two of them.
And, I agree.
And their son, I did like the way that they portrayed the deaf son. I think that was very tastefully done and kind of a nice commentary on people with that issue. So I think that was handled very well. The relationship between the son and Dreyfuss was great. This film had like no profanity, no violence. This is like the perfect family film, I'd say. I mean, just sit down with your kids and just put this movie on, and you know,
it does have some ASL swearing in it.
That's true. To be fair. All right, maybe I go back and amend that, but you know what I mean.
But yes. No, I know what you mean, because for me, I have a lot of, like, my parents were very big fans of the. This movie when it came out, so they watched it a lot when we got it on home VHS and home DVD, and so it's actually been a while since I've watched it, and it's one of those ones where rewatching it really did remind me how much this film has stuck with me through the years. And I think it's because it's like it's a movie written by somebody who clearly had that teacher in school, the one that made an impact and stuck with you and was able to tell a very good story about probably what the life of that teacher looked like. And what I appreciate about this one mm-hmm. is that he is a very flawed person,
right.
And like, whereas he can be a great teacher, he's a horrible father.
He is a really
he's a really bad husband from time. And what I like is it shows that he's a person who gets a lot wrong before he gets it right, and that it is an ugly path to get to where he is. And it's still the fact that despite warts and all, he, you know, conducted that great symphony by the end, the with his students, essentially, you know, the metaphor made whole. There's a lot of sympathy you have with him, a lot of the anger, you can feel that. And that's why I always like this movie, is because it's not afraid to make him unlikable.
Right.
It's not afraid to show that he is far from a perfect person.
Right.
And that even if he has a midlife crisis moment of weakness with a student, or can't figure out how to talk to his son when they can't communicate on the level that he wants to. Right. And I think the movie handles that very
well. Yeah. One thing that really struck me this time around watching it with the storyline with Cole is the fact that it shows how society, especially deaf society, was going through a transition of the deaf and hard of hearing community really advocating for themselves and really organizing. And also pushing back against therapists that were suggesting assimilation into hearing culture, that mm-hmm. it's like you need to learn to read lips and you need to learn to speak. Early on, after they get the diagnosis that their son is deaf, there's a therapist that tells them, oh, he needs to learn to be able, like, you can't be doing gestures with him. You have to, like, teach him how to speak, because otherwise he's not going to be able to fit into society. And then when he finally gets that deaf community through the school, that instantly changes. And if anything, I feel like the storyline with Cole, I think, is a great argument for why they should have left out the whole storyline with the with the musical. Well, maybe not the whole storyline with the musical, but maybe with the student and the potential of the affair, because I feel like there was so much more that they could have gone into with his son and with that relationship. And also the movie alludes so much to a lot of the society changes that were going on at that time, and it was such a time of upheaval as far as new rights that were secured in law for people of various disabilities. I think it would have been maybe cool to even explore that a little bit, or to spend more time at the deaf school. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, they could have focused a little bit more with on Cole. The movie is a little bit all over the place towards the end, or the middle to end. Mm-hmm. You know, I did respect some of the choices that the director made. Yeah, the movie was sort of like the way they handled the deaf son storyline. It kind of was a reverse of Coda in a weird way.
Yeah.
You know, but like really, again, tastefully done. I really respected what they did to shed a light on that deaf culture. And also to your point, Eric, Richard Dreyfuss, he's kind of typecast as a guy who's not very likable or just kind of like, I don't know. It's weird. He's very quirky, very morally mm-hmm. ambiguous in a lot of his roles. You know, he's not like a standard heroic leading man.
I really agree with everything you guys are sharing. And it reminded me a little bit of a wonderful movie called The Sound of Metal, where they really talk about, you know, the attitudes towards just not being able to hear, not being a disability, and it just being a different way of living in the world. And I felt like the movie, this movie did such an incredible job of like that, the fact that Holland didn't like that his son couldn't hear, because he just assumed then that he couldn't share his love for music with his son was his problem. And like Eric said, you know, it shows his own flaws, and it wasn't that there was anything wrong with Cole. It was just that he just assumed like, now I don't get to share the one thing I love, like bad luck for me, you know. And I really love too, like that when Cole really went after him in such a powerful way and really confronted him, he really sat with that and made a huge change with that and really figured out a way as a teacher. And I love that he like had this thing that he didn't want to do, that he fell in love with, that then became his lens, that he figured out a lot of things in his life through. And he figured out how to connect with Cole and how to share a love of music and see it as something really interesting instead of a disability. I thought that handled it really in a wonderful, unique way.
Agreed with all that. But I would have liked to have seen them go a little bit deeper, a little further with the father-son relationship, because that's always very, very, it tugs at the heartstrings for sure, especially for me.
It also, this movie has one of my favorite smash cuts of when he first plays Louie, smash cut to William H. Macy, All-American, sliding down communism through the hallways. It's like subversive music.
Yes.
That's one of my, I love that smash cut.
And yeah, basically, and I love the message of, you know, it's basically a metaphor for life. Like he's spending his entire career, his entire life trying to complete this piece of music. And it's like a metaphor for all of our lives. You know, we're all trying to complete something, you know, and it's just beautifully done.
And so. I was going to ask, Randy, because I know you're a big film score person. And I think one of the things that really works about this is that when you finally have the big cathartic moment, his American Symphony played, and you're like, hey, that's pretty good. Like it's like everyone in the audience like, oh, thank God, it wasn't terrible. She composed a good symphony.
That piece of music, the American Symphony, was actually written by the composer of the score here, Michael Kamen, who is probably best known for his music from Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Yep. I would have liked to have maybe heard Jerry Goldsmith, but that's just me. yes, still a great score and a great movie. So that's great. You could catch episodes of Under the Radar on Manhattan Neighborhood Network, and that's Mondays at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. Also, feel free to subscribe to the Under the Radar YouTube channel. And of course, listen to SiriusXM Slam Radio for new episodes of the podcast of Under the Radar every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. So check out that for new episodes. Rachel, Eric, Ivy, thank you. This was amazing. You guys are always so insightful, so full of life and knowledge. And I respect all of you so much on this holiday season. I'm very grateful to all of you. And to everyone else listening and watching, happy holidays. I'm Randy Unger. This has been Unger the Radar. We'll see you next time, bringing movies and people together, one frame at a time. Take care, guys.